Good morning, everyone. This is Judge Sleater. This is our second of three Court of Appeals oral arguments today. Judges Ross and Reyes are joining me, and we have counsel only in this matter, as I understand it, for appellant. And I see Mr. David, is it Gapin?
It is correct, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. And so you'll be arguing on behalf of appellants. Respondents did correspond with the court indicating that they chose not to take part in either briefing and or oral argument. So Mr. Gapin, you'll have 15 minutes. We'll assume you won't need rebuttal to yourself, so we'll conclude at that point. Jason Heiken and the marshal will be demonstrating the clock by his phone, so you'll see that. And if at any time you have technological issues such that either we can't hear you or you can't hear us or some other issues, we'll stop the clock and hopefully get reconnected properly. And so other than that, everything will be as usual here at the Court of Appeals. I'll just note for the record as well that A192099 is this file number in the matter of the welfare of the children of C.F. Parent. And so when you are ready to proceed, you can identify yourself for the record as we are recording this proceeding, and then you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. My name is David. May it please the court, my name is David Gapin. I am the attorney for the appellants, the former foster parents of the children who are the subjects of this proceeding. This proceeding involves three children who are now, they're twins who are 10 and a 9-year-old, but there is a fourth child who is a sibling who goes along with these children. That fourth child is the almost 3-year-old who is not the subject of this appeal as he is under a separate court file. But I want to bear in mind that.
If you could explain what you, I saw the term sibling in your brief as well, and I wasn't quite clear in what way this other child is a sibling. Can you elaborate on that? Was it an adopted child? Was it actually a biological sibling?
It's a biological sibling, Your Honor. It's a child of the same mother, and I'm not aware on this record whether it's the same father, but it's a biological sibling. And the way that he is under a separate court file is he was born subsequent to the opening of the child protection case. So the child protection case here has been open since for the three older children was opened in 2014 by Hennepin County. This child was born in or the youngest child was born in September of 2017. And so he was put under a separate, they opened a separate child protection case at that time rather than adding him to the existing child protection case.
Thank you.
So in terms of, I think it's very important for the court to focus on the standard of review in this case. It is the typical abuse of discretion standard of review. However, the abuse of discretion has to be determined by looking at how much discretion the juvenile court judge actually had. And as set forth in my brief, adoption law is a creature of statute. It is solely the statutory law that governs. And we're dealing with a statute that was enacted, it was new in 2012, and that's 260C.607. And that has to do with, the adoption law for post-child protection matter was moved into 260C, and this new procedure was created. There used to be actually a bifurcated process where the reasonableness would be determined based on a trial first, and then only if the county was unreasonable would it move to a best interest analysis. I think this statute was intended to streamline the process, but importantly, what it does is it makes clear how much discretion a juvenile court has in looking at the reasonableness or unreasonableness of the county's actions.
Mr. Gapin, can I inquire about that? You did focus heavily on that Bloomington case, the city of Bloomington case, for what appears almost to be an administrative law type of review. And I know we've had some unpublished decisions referencing that, but as you point out, an abuse of discretion, which clearly the court and Supreme Court has identified as with the judge, and that's our review. And since here, unlike an administrative law case, it's purely an evidentiary, a trial essentially, that we're reviewing findings of fact of the district court, I question the applicability of that type of review, such that essentially here we would be reviewing the findings of fact that this court made, and this court made some very rather specific credibility determinations, and it traditionally, of course, we would simply defer to those credibility determinations. Is that it? Would that not be a correct statement?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that we need to get to credibility determinations because I think the court, in terms of it, laid out the legal standard, and I know the Administrative Procedures Act does not apply to this case. However, it is analogous. And if the court's memorandum sets forth the legal standard that it felt that it was applying, specifically the term unreasonableness as defined in Black's Law Dictionary, meaning that the county's actions was were irrational or capricious. And the court said, basically, the juvenile court said, did the county's actions have a factual basis in the record? Now, the credibility determinations that the court made, I believe, had to do with, and it was specific to the county worker who actually moved the children in 2017, which was Erica Posthumus. And the court found, based upon those credibility determinations, that the manner in which that move was conducted was unreasonable. But it did not get to whether the county had a reason to do the move or not. Basically, the move was done too quickly, and based upon what the court believed was basically deception of that previous trial court judge. However, on this record, and there's an extensive record here over the course of 10 days of trial, the record supports that the county had good reason to move the children. The children were placed with the former foster parents in December of 2014. And the children were not moved out of the care of the former foster parents until November of 2017. So it was just a month shy of 3 years that they had the children in their care. During that time, and this record supports that, and their own testimony supports that, they did not ask to be a permanency option for the children. They did not say, we would be willing to adopt the children, until 1 month before this transfer occurred on October 16th.
Just to follow up that comment, though, it seems like that's the wrong question. In other words, the issue is not whether it was reasonable to consider the foster parents, your clients, whether it's unreasonable not to place with the former foster parents. And it seems like that very credibility determination, in fact, the court's findings suggested that that individual actually lied to the court, lied to the former foster parents. Would that not specifically support a finding that it's unreasonable not to continue the placement or with the former foster parents? In other words, we would have to ignore those findings in order to say there's an abuse or that they're erroneous.
Well, Your Honor, the record supports that there had been a meeting to plan this transition on October 16th of 2017. And that was the point at which the former foster parents said, hey, we'd be willing to consider adopting. But the court or the county had lots of reasons prior to that to believe that or to look at a new placement for the children because, and I cite, no less than 13 times in the record, the former foster parents said, we were not willing to be considered as an adoptive placement. The former foster father's testimony was, the county kept asking us to adopt and we kept saying no. And the former foster mother said, well, we thought it would help with the termination. We didn't want to be considered for adoption. So the county had good reason to do that. And I think if the court looks closely at the credibility determination regarding the reason or the move that happened in 2017, I think it really has to do with the manner in which it was conducted. It seems that the social worker did it too quickly. And based upon her belief, I don't know what her belief was because unfortunately she did not testify at the trial in this manner. And I think it's very difficult or very problematic that the court made credibility determinations and based the unreasonableness on the credibility of a witness or an individual who was not a witness and did not testify in this matter as to what the actual legitimate reasons for the county's actions were. But I think if the court looks at this record as a whole, there were ample legitimate reasons for the county to take the action that it did. And at that time, both the trial court judge, well, actually the trial court judge and the guardian ad litem supported the move to a permanency placement. I mean, that's the county's job if they cannot reunify a child in a child protection system in the child protection matter with the parent is to find a permanent placement option. And this record shows that they had been looking for over a year for someone who was willing to be a permanency option for these children. They had put out the request and they recirculated it multiple times in 2016 and 2017. And they had gone to the former foster parents and the county had asked the former foster parents, can you find an adoptive placement through your church? Can you find an adoptive placement in your community? So clearly the former foster parents were on notice that the county was looking for someone that was willing to adopt these children. And then it was not until the transition plan had already been made and put into action by the county that they changed course.
Mr. Gibbon?
I think the county's decision that, yes.
Can I interrupt you for a question? Sorry. I don't want to take you off track of your primary argument, but I did want to question you about something I saw in your brief that didn't seem to me to be consistent with the actual approach by the court. Your brief, I'm not sure what page it is. Somehow your page numbers fell off of your brief. I don't have any page numbers. But the juvenile courts, it's a heading B under your argument 3. So it's 3B. The juvenile court's favoring of the former foster parents solely based upon race is impermissible. And I would agree with you if the district court's decision based this decision solely upon race, it would be impermissible under the law. But as I read the thorough district court's findings and analysis, it did not seem to me that the district court was favoring the former foster parents solely based upon race. Can you elaborate? Does your heading overstate the argument, or am I missing something?
Well, Your Honor, I scoured the record and I spent a lot of time reviewing the record. And I mean, the court makes conclusory statements about the reason to favor the former foster parents. But a close look at the record, I couldn't find any support other than the testimony that these children would benefit by being raised in a home where the caregivers looked like them.
Well, let me direct you to finding 127.2, which is in the court's best interest findings. And the court elaborates on what the court found, and I'm quoting here, extremely troubling that the children's current functioning and behaviors in the foster parents' home are extremely troubling. And the court goes into some detail explaining how conditions changed substantially for the worse in your client's home. And the court goes into detail about physical and psychological concerns the court had with the children in your parents' home. And the court found, and I'm quoting here, that this factor weighs heavily in favor of the former foster parents as permanency placement. And how is that finding consistent with your statement that the district court bases this decision solely upon race?
Well, Your Honor, that finding, 127.2, was actually not the religious and cultural finding. That was a finding based upon the children's current functioning and behaviors. And I think it's very troublesome, the findings that the court made on the functioning and behaviors. if the court reviews the record carefully, the only testimony about the children's psychological health and welfare was from Julie Horman, their current, well, current provider.
Excuse me. Before you go to challenge the finding, I'm just on a more fundamental basis. I just want to get at the point that I'm having trouble with, which is your representation that the district court's determination was based solely upon race. Now, you may have reason to challenge the finding that I quoted from, but would you acknowledge that at least that finding was not based upon race?
And perhaps I can clarify in terms of, in my brief, when I said solely based upon race, I was referring to that specific factor.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It doesn't factor by factor and weighted each one.
Okay. It doesn't. That does not appear so in the way you framed it. So maybe I just, I mean, I was reading it literally and wasn't, you must have had something going on in your mind that didn't make it onto the page.
Right. I was taking an analysis similar to what the juvenile court did and going factor by factor in terms of the best interest factors. And with respect to the cultural needs factor, I believe that the record shows that the foster parents were doing what they should have been doing and were willing to do what they should have been doing to support these children. And I don't think the court made any findings. In fact, the court made a specific finding that they'd done more than any reasonable person should do to support these children. So really, there was a reasonable reason for the county to place with them. It was appropriate for the county to support them after the children had been in their care for 2 years or approximately 2 years. And so we would ask that the court correct the error that was made, remand to the juvenile court with direction that the adoption should proceed. Thank you.
Judge Slater, may I ask one additional question?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. Mr. Gapin, in that same section, you have a statement that you say, however, what the juvenile court gets wrong is that it cannot simply use the term culture as a stand-in for race. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit more. What exactly do you mean by that statement?
Well, the guidance that has been put out by the Department of Human Services about what culture means is it's not the same as race, color, national origin. It's customary beliefs, social forms, material traits of a racial, religious, or social group. So yes, race does come into it, but the findings specifically have to be about customary beliefs, social forms, and material traits. And the juvenile court here did not make specific findings about those types of things. It just made findings that these children would be benefited by being in a home where I think the term that was used was the caregivers mirror what they look like.
So in other words, when I think it's, are you referring to the finding of fact where the discord says that the former foster parents, as well as other African-American people to whom they have exposed the children, including therapists, fellow churchgoers, members of the children's extended family, also provide a mirror for the children? Is that what you're referring to?
That's the one, yes.
Okay.
Am I correct that your argument is not that this analysis is erroneous, but that it is emphasized too significantly?
That is, yes, that is accurate.
Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Gapin. And we will consider your comments today as well as your briefing and take the matter under advisement. We'll be issuing an order in the statutory period.